One, two, three. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. This is the high energy intro. Where was I going with this?
High energy.
You're saying welcome.
Okay. Wait, can we start this over?
Oh man, this.
I don't feel good about that. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. My name is Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger, fresh back from a ragey weekend in Santa Barbara.
Yes, I think that's the only kind of weekend that you can have in Santa Barbara.
How was it?
It was a blast. We had never been before. Our boy Cody married his girl Sarah, shout out one time.
Big shout out to the newlyweds.
Big shout out to the newlyweds.
Former high school roller hockey teammate.
Yes, indeed.
And so that's big time.
Little known fact that guy scored a Novetch trick with us after high school.
In a beer league game.
In a beer league, adult league game. 9 goals, for those of you that don't remember
Who would be Cody Levine's NHL equivalent?
Like, Ovechkin's not a bad comparison. Yeah, like big brooding forward, powerful slap shot.
I have one, but I'll
and
Joe,
the main thing is he throws his weight around, and he loves his slap shot. But there's no real player that's just sort of that.
Big Buff?
Dustin
Bufflin.
All right, that's spot on.
Okay. Well, good for him. Really happy. He seems like he has life together.
He does.
So I'm happy for him.
Yes. At the tender age of 24, seems like he's got everything going on.
Yeah. Playoff hockey. We got 2 Game 7s on tap. Edmonton Oilers against Anaheim Ducks and Pittsburgh Penguins, Washington Capitals on Wednesday.
Yes.
Wednesday night. Before we get into that, though, I want to make a quick little mention here that at the end of the last podcast, we basically try to get you guys who've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you know, since we started in like August.
July.
You know, if you're a longtime listener or a new listener and you've been liking the show, we'd really appreciate a review on iTunes. It helps the show move up in the rankings, helps us bring in new listeners. And if nothing else, it's good to hear from people and kind of know what they're liking, what we could work on. So if you've been listening to the show, you know, go on iTunes, leave a review. It takes like not even 5 minutes.
Yeah, it helps the show get noticed, and it helps us. You know, you leave a review, you know, constructive criticism is always welcome.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate it.
Compliments are also dope.
Shout out to, I think, Dillian Pickles and CCJPM or something.
Yes, it was in some sort of order, those letters.
I'm trying to go off the top of my head here, but thank you to those two people who left very kind reviews. Apparently, we're underrated.
We are.
So I kind of like that.
It was pretty funny.
I kind of like that.
I showed Joe, or I told Joe about that review. I said, hey, there was someone that gave us a 5-star review, and they said we're underrated. And Joe said, yeah, we are. Duh.
Yeah. So anyway, if you guys enjoy the show, you know, throw us a review. It would be greatly, greatly appreciated.
I'm trying to chart in the top 200 in the sports section. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, all due respect to the shows in the top 200, but you know, we belong.
We can hang.
All right. So playoffs, busy weekend. Well, actually, you guys didn't really miss any hockey because game 6 of Oilers Ducks. We'll start with that series. Oilers Ducks was, on Friday night.
Mm.
And then Penguins Capitals just ended like 40 minutes ago. Ducks Oilers game 6 was last night.
Yes.
Did you watch that?
Yes.
Okay.
We walked in the house after the drive home from Santa Barbara, and right at the end of the first period when it was 5-0.
5-0. So a quick recap for those who might not have been watching the series as closely. In game 5, the Ducks were down 3-0, tied it up, you know, with 3 minutes remaining in the game. Won in overtime with a nice Corey Perry goal. Game 6, they get rocked.
Shellacked.
7-1. And then the Capitals winning 2 games in a row. Alex Ovechkin moved down to the third line, maybe imitating the Pittsburgh HBK line last year.
Mm.
But anyway, before we get into that, Ducks Oilers, game 7 Wednesday night. Thoughts?
Anaheim should win it. Like, you would think in a game 7, and I'm not going off of other playoff game 7s they've been in recently, but you know, and just in a game seven against, you know, the Oilers, who defensively are a little bit more of a sieve, you would think that they could take advantage of one game. And, you know, I asked in the chat earlier, how does Gibson respond after he gets shelled? Because it's happened a few times this year where, you know, he gets shelled, he gets mad at his coach, he gets mad at the media, you know, he's just mad. And, you know, how does he come back? And then, you know, looking it up, and he tends to not allow that many goals afterwards.
That's
so
good.
Yeah, you know, good, it sort of seems like if the trend holds, he should be he'll be due for a good game.
I think that game was definitely an aberration for Anaheim. It's been such a back and forth series, and there have been a bunch of plot twists. With some of the injuries now that Edmonton has, you know, I worry about them without guys like Andre Sekera.
And Oscar Clefbaum.
Yeah. Two of their most important defensemen.
You could say two of their defensemen. Like,
two of their top three.
Yeah, yeah, outside of Larson. So I worry about them from that standpoint. I don't think the Ducks are going to lay an egg like that again in Game 7. But, you know, there's going to be the people that bring up their history of Game 7 performances.
Yeah, so for those who might not know, the last four postseasons where the Ducks have led 3-2 in a series, they have lost Game 6 and gone on to lose Game 7.
Yes.
The last four times in a row.
Yeah.
That's kind of incredible.
It almost seems hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It kind of does.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, in Game 5, the Ducks, I think, for the most part, outplayed Edmonton. I mean, they had a penalty shot in the first period. They had a couple glorious scoring opportunities and couldn't cash in. Edmonton scores three goals in the second period and just kind of outplays the Anaheim. But then all throughout the third period and both overtime, Anaheim looks amazing.
Mm.
They tie it up, you know, with three minutes, you know, for all three goals. I think they look good in that game. And then in Game 6, I thought, you know, it was weird because the Oilers came out hungry. And mm-hmm. I think if anything, the Ducks were just so spent after Game 5. They had, you know, used up so much energy to come back. And, you know, you think about the Oilers, and they didn't really do all that much in Game 5, so they were probably a lot fresher.
Yeah, it was that dreaded letdown performance after a big win.
So how does that affect them in this game? Are they still...
Well, that's the question.
Are they still rebounding from that? Or, you know, the more veteran club, do they get a good night's sleep, and are they back?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I think that with the Ducks, you know, no Patrick Eves. He's in a walking boot. I don't think he's going to be back in these playoffs.
That's a huge loss.
Mm.
Well, it is, but then they won Game 5 without him and looked really good doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they had to come back, but they were just still playing generally well.
Yeah.
And then no Andre Kasha, who is in and out of the lineup, but that just leaves them playing guys like Nick Cordelis from San Diego, who had one game of NHL experience before these playoffs. So that puts them in a tough spot. I think they actually played with seven defensemen last game.
Mm.
So, but, you know, my big takeaway from Game 6, if you look at that first period, I mean, the first three goals were just, I mean, first off.
That first goal.
Softies on Gibson.
Yeah, muffins.
But also just bizarre bounces. I mean, the one where, I forget who it was, lofted a pass through the neutral zone, and then Ricard Raquel goes to glove it down, mm-hmm. and it just bounces off his glove towards a guy who's streaking behind him towards the Anaheim net. And, you know, like, stuff like that, like, that's not, there's no narrative there. Mm-hmm. That's just a weird bounce. So I think, you know, yes, the Oilers had more energy, but I think the Ducks, I think as a whole, that entire thing was just kind of like weird bounces, and all of a sudden, it just became this kind of like snowball effect.
Yeah.
And I think the Ducks were like, we're just going to close up shop. And even in the second period, the Ducks scored one goal. It was 5-1. And that building went silent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I found really interesting, because you could tell the Oilers don't play confidently with the lead.
Mm.
Because, I mean, tough to do that after you blow a big lead in Game 5. So
right.
I think that the Ducks, I mean, this, I don't know. I don't think that Game 6 has any bearing on Game 7. I personally.
Right. No, I'm not a believer in momentum. I think that you constantly have to reestablish it. I was the same way as you. When Anaheim scored, it felt like they were very much in it.
Like they were going to come back.
Yeah, again, it was like, okay, here we go. And there's still plenty of time. And then
they were playing well.
They were. And then the Draisaitl hat trick just really threw a whole bunch of water on it.
Yeah.
The thing about bounces, in Game 5 when the Ducks made the comeback.
They
definitely created their own good luck because they were going to the net and they were making things happen and they were playing well anyway. But that Rickard Rakell goal went off of like two people and just magically went in through the one opening.
Well, let's talk about that.
Let's do it.
Because I'm surprised I forgot about this. So, recapping once again, in Game 5, the tying goal for the Ducks, I think there was less than a minute left, or just over a minute. Point shot, rebound goes into the corner. Huge, huge pile in front of the Edmonton net. Rickard Rakell collects the rebound, just blindly backhands it at the net, somehow squeaks through, Ducks tie it up. But it was reviewed for goalie interference, and it was a pretty divisive topic on Twitter. I think all of Canada was just enraged.
Right.
Yeah. So you guys saw the play?
We did, yes.
Yeah.
Did you think it was goalie interference on Ryan? So again, recapping, the person in question was Ryan Kesler because he was down in the crease and his arm was stuck underneath the pad of Cam Talbot.
Right. Yeah, from that overhead view, the famed overhead view that always seems to give, more often than not, the definitive
answer.
It very much looks like he is holding on for dear life to Cam Talbot's pad, like not allowing him to move.
Yeah.
He was the boot on his car. but like the point that I saw was, he got pushed over and Cam Talbot's pad is on his stick.
Yeah.
And he's holding on to his stick.
He was still holding on to his stick.
And from there's a screenshot that I saw from ice level. That is absolutely the case. Both hands are firmly on his stick. There's nothing holding on to Cam Talbot.
Now, that doesn't absolve him necessarily from holding on to the pad, because you can still...
Yeah.
But it does kind of, I think, add a little nuance to it. Nick, what'd you see on that play? As a former official yourself.
I mean, that's a part of my life that I don't talk about. when it first happened, I didn't even notice that there was any kind of contact at all. Yeah. And, why would you? There were, 40 bodies in front of the net and all that. But I mean, that still motion view, that picture of his arm wrapped under, it doesn't look like he's really impeding any kind of movement, or certainly not enough, I thought.
I think what we have to be careful about with these image grabs is that play happened in 2 seconds.
Yeah, yes. And that was literally one 24th of a frame.
And so, I think that when you think about it from that perspective, I think that gives... That helps Ryan Kesler's case more than anything.
It does.
And so the NHL's ruling on it was that Darnell Nurse pushed Kesler into the crease, and because of that, it
negates any contact that the opposing player has on the goaltender.
And if you watch the play again, I don't think Ryan Kesler is doing anything to interfere with Cam Talbot.
I didn't think he was either.
Yeah. I think he was pushed in. He didn't the thing is, if he had actually tried to move out, I think he would have actually interfered with him more.
Right.
So I think he was just in a weird spot. I think that the league got it right, because look at it this way. The call on the ice is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you look at that replay and automatically, without any doubt, say that is not a goal, that it's goalie interference. And people were like, well, how can that not be? And I'm like, well, it's not that simple.
Mm.
And I think what's unfortunate in all of this is that it's so hard to know what goalie interference is anymore.
Earlier in the series, it happened very quickly. And Getzlaf was the one who took a shot. And Corey Perry is going from the corner to the front of the net. Yeah. Cam Talbot is at the top of his crease. He's not he's not oh, look at him challenge and make the save. He's in his crease, just at the top. And Perry goes by, and it looks like Perry definitely makes a lot of contact with Talbot.
Yeah.
And it affected his ability to make the save directly. And the call, it was reviewed, and the call on the ice it was a good goal.
Yeah.
And I got my iPod immediately, and I was like, that was a goal. Everyone knows here that was a goal.
It
was not a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
That there was contact. And then on NHL Tonight, later on, they were showing the actual letter of the rule. They brought up, whatever, what/what, point what. And if they said that Talbot was, his foot was outside of the crease,
mm-hmm.
that's the part of him that Corey Perry made contact with.
And it was incidental contact.
And it was incidental.
Yeah.
ergo the goal stands. Yeah. It's not goalie interference. And I'm like, Cam Talbot played his position really well. And it's like I said earlier, it's not like he was outside the crease challenging the shot. He was at the top of the crease, but well within the crease. Like probably like 80% of his body was inside the crease. Yeah. And Corey Perry's contact led to him, it disrupted him enough. And I think that's absolutely why the shot went in. However, the letter of the rule, the call was absolutely correct. The question after that is, well, it's been called a certain way the whole season. Is this consistent with that?
Well, I think that's the big question, because I think that the takeaway from all of this is I think the league and the officials are interpreting their own rules correctly.
Mm.
Like, if you go by the letter of the law, at least the laws they've showed us, they're applying it appropriately. I think going forward in you know, following seasons and in, you know, GM meetings or whatever, it's, is this the best way to go about it? You know, should any contact with the goaltender be immediately waved off? You look confused.
Oh, I was, what you were saying about, I was thinking, I wasn't,
okay.
What you said about, going forward, you know, the league has to be clear about this. I can't remember.
I think they are clear. You know, like, I think people are just outraged.
But there was a rule, and it might be before the season that with the goalie interference rule, that they came out with a package of clips saying, all right, this is what's wrong, this is okay. And I can't remember if it was specifically about goalie interference, if it was another penalty. I think it was a different call from a couple of years ago in rule changes. I just can't remember what it was. But, you know, obviously there's been enough controversy this playoffs, not just in that goal, but in these playoffs over goalie interference, that I think the NHL going into next season absolutely needs to define this better. And with, like, video examples, this is goalie interference and this is why. And this very similar play is not goalie interference and this is why. And I think
it would but I think they've already done that. It's just people seem to not... I don't know.
Or it seems like there needs to be a change, because, like you said, Felix, they're following the letter of the law. It's just that the letter of the law doesn't seem right.
Is it within the spirit of the game
to
allow that stuff? Me personally, I think that I actually like where we're at, because I think it allows for a bit of a middle ground. I think if there's any contact with the goaltender, you're going to see more goals taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't really give a damn if Cam Talbot's skate got touched and the puck went in. Like, whatever, you know? That's me personally. I think within the spirit of the game, that's fine. If Corey Perry comes in and bowls him over or really moves him out of the way, then I think, you know, and that becomes a judgment call. And I think that's why, and this is something that someone brought up to me on Twitter, Mark Posner, I think it was. Posner or Posner, one of the two.
Phonetics, right?
I apologize if I mispronounced that, but... if it's a judgment call on the ice, then why are we even reviewing?
Right.
You know, like, I think that gives the impression that there's a right or wrong here. It's ultimately a judgment call within a certain framework. And if you're reviewing it, you're basically saying that, like, this is more of a hard line thing, when really it's a lot of judgment. And I think it makes the officials look bad. I think it undermines their authority. I just don't like the whole thing,
I mean,
to be honest.
I completely understand, you know, that line of logic, but, you know, there are, you know, because hockey is a fast sport.
I mean, obviously you got to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's what we want as fans. But it's like, why have officials then?
Yeah, there was another play in the Washington Pittsburgh series where TJ Oshie, he's in the corner with Kunackle?
I don't remember.
What game is this? Is this game 5? Well, anyway.
It was 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And the ref, you know, because they're in the corner, and the ref is behind both of them looking at them. So he sees their backs, and Oshie goes in under to try and lift the stick.
Oh.
Completely misses the stick, and the ref sees...
Bonino.
This is Bonino.
Yeah, he sees Bonino's head go back, and Oshie didn't argue. And it absolutely, in the moment... it looked like, and even in the first replay at full speed, you know, it looked like it was a high stick.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at it again, and Oshie never
touched him.
Yeah.
Well, and this is actually a good point to bring up. I think that if we're going to have reviews, I think that it should only be on plays that are black and white. So, did he high stick him? Did he hook him? Did he trip him? Because to me, goalie interference, it doesn't feel black and white, you know? Mm-hmm. And some rules within the game are up to the referee's discretion. And so to me, if I were the commissioner of the league, I would do away with the challenge for goalie interference. And I know that's controversial, but I think it would speed up the game. And honestly, I can, if a goal is allowed because, and there's a little interference, to me, I don't care. That's just me. And then I would make it, I would make a high stick, a hook, the kind of black and white plays a challengeable offense.
I do absolutely agree with that. There's one,
because then the review would take like a minute.
There's one modifier though for the goalie interference. In the rule, it says if a defenseman or a skater on the same team as a goalie pushes the opposing player into the goalie, it's not goalie interference. And a lot of times before instant replay looked at goalie interference, that it seemed like that was the case. The reason why there were goals taken away that shouldn't have been taken away was because it wasn't actually the puck carrier's fault. Mm-hmm. It was the defenseman pushing him into the goalie.
That's been the name of the game this postseason is, did he get pushed in or did he go in of his own accord? Yeah. It's happened so many times. And even when you replay it, it's hard to tell.
So I agree with you. If there's, you know, contact between, you know, skater and goalie, that, you know, it's a judgment call, leave it up to the ref. However, the one aspect of it that coaches should be able to challenge is, well, he got pushed in by the defenseman or whoever's riding his back.
Yeah, it's tough. I think that, and this is the other thing that I've noticed, how many, I want someone to do a study on this, how many times does a call on the ice actually determine the outcome of the review?
Because
it seems like if the call on the ice is goal, it's going to take, like, it's going to take a miracle for it to be overturned. So it's like, well, then why are we even reviewing?
Yeah.
You know, if that Oshie high stick gets reviewed, I mean, that's for sure not a penalty.
Right.
You know, and that takes like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
If that, the time they can get that little iPad to start working.
Yeah. Yeah. They can even see it on that tiny little screen.
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't want to make this podcast all about officiating, but that was a huge bit of discussion. And I mean, like, the Oilers fans, the Canadian media that were saying that the Oilers had been screwed by the refs and they should have already won that series. You know, like, I saw someone tweet that, you know, when the Oilers were up 5-0, like, oh yeah, the Oilers should already have won the series, or this series should already be like one game from being over. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, the Oilers got outplayed in game five.
If it's so that clear cut, then the Oilers, they would be more dominant in the series.
And I hate dealing with these hypotheticals where it's like, oh, because of that call, the Oilers lost. You know, the way the Ducks were playing, they were probably going to score another one anyway. And you know, like, we never know.
I said to you, after the Ducks made the series 2-2, they should be up 3-1.
Yeah, so it's like, who cares? Like, the Oilers shouldn't, like, people need to cut it out, man. I think that what bothers me with some of the Canadian media is that they do a bad job of hiding their bias.
Oh, yeah.
So, absolutely.
No.
And I mean, like, you know, I follow the Ducks, and maybe I see it a certain way, but I'm also not, like, a fan or anything. So it's like, I feel like I'm as objective as you can be, you know, in those situations.
Breaking news. Canadian media, very biased.
Well, I don't think they're all like that. I just think in general, the TSN and Sportsnet types that I saw tweeting were all completely outraged. And I'm like, right. How can you all to a man be like outraged? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So game seven, who do you got?
I've got the Ducks.
Why?
Look, I think John Gibson will rebound.
Those were
a whole bunch of muffins that he let in. Like, I just don't see it happening
again. Even if they were from high danger spots, it was still like little... like, I could have blown on that puck and it would have, like, you know, gone away from the goal.
And then, like, Edmonton, you know, the defense is a little depleted now. And, you know what? Maybe that won't matter if Leon Draisaitl keeps playing like Gretzky, but...
But the fact that it's in Anaheim... Anyway.
Yeah, it's in Anaheim. And, you know, I think you were saying to us, Gibson plays very well in Anaheim. And I don't see Ryan Getzlaff slowing his role either.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'll take Anaheim.
Okay. Joe, who you got?
I've got Anaheim, but I have to say I don't feel good about it.
Well, how can you?
Yeah. it's just like, for what I was saying at the beginning of the podcast about, you know, how Anaheim, like, that was just a weird game, and you would think that, you know, they should be able to rebound quite nicely. Edmonton shouldn't even have made the playoffs this year. Like,
ooh, like that's a spicy fire, take.
Fire.
Like, oh, I'm not saying that because of. Oh my God. I'm not saying that because of.
I'm going to make that the quote when we tweet this podcast out, and then I'm going to put hashtag Oilers, and I'm going to put your Twitter in there.
And I'm not saying that.
RIP your mentions.
Because they didn't earn the way into the playoffs. They did. But because they're, like Toronto, they're ahead of the rebuilding schedule.
Right.
One actually might argue.
Can we even call it a rebuild?
I mean, with how many number one picks they've had and screwed up, they're actually kind of behind.
It's like a rebuild. Throw up.
but like, if you look at the Edmonton team, you know, despite, you know, what I do not like about their defense and their now injured defense, they're a very young team with the most talented hockey player in the world on their team, and they are very fast.
Yeah.
And speed is the great equalizer in hockey. If you're fast, no matter what your other deficiencies are, you can overcome them.
Yeah.
I see this being a close game. I see McDavid and Draisaitl still having their way when they're out on the ice. But I see Anaheim pulling through.
Okay. So you have Anaheim?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say Anaheim as well, because I think that this, everything I've seen from the Ducks in this series is exactly what I've seen for the last, like, 80-something games.
Mm-hmm.
They take a game off. They take a game off. You know, like they're just so up and down. And for them to just completely crap the bed in the last game was, didn't feel that surprising to me. And now they're going to come back. They're at home. I think there's, you know, if it wasn't for like this narrative of the Game 7 thing, I don't think they would really think about it. But I think those guys are tired of hearing that.
Mm.
I think they're going to bring it. I think, like you said, Gibson's going to rebound. I think Edmonton might have scored all of its goals last game.
Mm. Maybe.
Anyway, that's not very scientific.
Figuratively.
But I just think Anaheim, this is the year that they snap it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I think that, you know, they're going to advance and that's
going to
be it.
And they have a lot of guys going too. Perry is playing well. Getzlaf and Raquel, like they've got their weapons going. So
yeah, like, you know, it to me it's a crapshoot. If I'm being honest, I think it's a complete crapshoot.
Yeah.
And I don't really have a huge reason for picking Anaheim. I just think the fact that they're at home, the fact that they played really well at home last game. I think that generally they've played well at home. As long as they can stay out of the box, stay a little bit more disciplined. And I just don't, I don't trust the Oilers to play like that again. Just don't. And, you know, so we'll see. But Anaheim has to have a good first period. I think that if they allow the first goal, that's going to be, because, I mean, you can't start down a handful of goals every game. Like, that's just, you can't do that.
Yeah. And with Edmonton, they've proven that they're just as capable of losing 7-0 as they are of winning 7-0 or 7-1.
Yeah. And so. I just think that can Edmonton survive another game without two of their best defensemen? I'm not convinced, and I know that Anaheim is missing Patrick Eves, and, well, Andre Kasha doesn't play every game, but like, and that's a big chunk, but look, that's just more minutes for Corey Perry. They're not really playing the fourth line anyway, so, and look, that blue line has played incredibly well.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my final point in the series, and we'll move on to Wash Pit.
Cool. Their ship name.
Someone tweeted out that Oilers Predators would be, an Oilers-Predators conference final would be a celebration of everything right in hockey. And I was like, okay, so full disclosure, I find this group of Oilers very hateable.
Like this team?
This team, because, okay, Connor McDavid's great. They're young guys. You know, we talk a lot about their young guys, but who are their young guys? It's Draisaitl. Eberle's not that young anymore. Nugent Hopkins is still a good player, but he was drafted in 2011.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that the media's been celebrating as. He's turned himself into this two-way forward.
Except Getzlaf is beasted and feasted.
The second coming of Jonathan Toews. Yeah. And if you look on Corey Perry's goal in OT, it's Nugent Hopkins that blows his assignment and allows Perry to get so open and have so much room in front.
Yes.
People talked about what a great series Ryan Nugent Hopkins had against San Jose. I did not see him.
Yeah, and so it's there's this whole narrative around the Oilers that I just find so untrue. I mean, guys like Zach Kassian, Milan Lucic, who's another guy? I mean, even, it just doesn't.
Patrick Maroon.
Oh my God, Patrick Maroon. Just like all these fake tough guys. Oh, because Milan Lucic will run every little guy. But as soon as a big guy comes up to him, then, you know, it's over.
Mm-hmm,
right. Or he'll kind of do that thing where he's pushing, but also backing away at the same time.
Yeah, like, hold me back, hold me back.
Look, I don't enjoy this group of Oilers. I really don't.
The thing about it, like them being a better celebration of hockey than the Ducks, like Ryan Getzlaff's going to the Hall of Fame. Like,
yeah, and so my point was when I saw that tweet was, well, you could say that and be pretty much wrong, or you could say, look at the Ducks. Their oldest defenseman is 26 years old. They have guys who are 21, 22, I think 24 playing big minutes. And they're all puck-moving guys. Like, this is something we haven't really seen.
Look at it this way, and sort of building on that point, a celebration of, you know, everything that's right about hockey. If you look at Anaheim...
Cody McLeod.
Anaheim compared... Yeah, oh my God.
Right?
Anaheim compared to Edmonton. Anaheim, ever since Bobby Orr came into the league, defense has been going more towards that mold, yeah. The Bobby Orr mold. Anaheim is that. Edmonton does not have defense.
Well, that's my thing. It's like, what is... Look, the Oilers are a nice story. And, you know, their rebuild, their barf build. Because they've barfed their way into this team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they have.
I just think, why are we giving them so much credit? They got lucky to get this generation... Look, I'm sorry for all the hot takes right now. But this has been... I've been stewing the last couple of days. You guys have been out of town. I've had no one to talk to. This has been building up.
The thermometer says 98 degrees.
I'm actually sweating.
It's like, spicy.
It's fucking hot in here. But look, I just, what is there? Like, I totally love the Connor McDavid story, but they got lucky to get him. Mm. They haven't really done crap outside of that. They traded one of their best players for a, you know, decent defensive defenseman. Mm. Spent a boatload of money on Milan Lucic, who's like terrible. I just, like, what are we celebrating? Shit. I'm pissed.
I mean, this is a team, like, building on my point earlier, where they shouldn't even be in the playoffs.
I think that's spicier, though, than everything I've just said.
This is a team with, like, just look at last year when McDavid was hurt. Look at this after
they flamed out.
After the hot start. The two reasons why the Oilers are in the playoffs and where they are now, McDavid, Talbot. That's it.
Well, that's not it. But that's a lot of it.
It's most of it.
Yeah. I mean, and some of the moves they made, like they just, like they traded Brandon Davidson, who I know is not like a world beater, but for David Desharnais, who wasn't doing, like which David Desharnais were they watching in Montreal?
Mm.
You know, like, I think there's such poor talent evaluators in Edmonton, and I really worry about what this team is going to look like 2 years down the line, because I don't trust them to, like, build on this.
Mm.
You know, they're going to trade Ryan Nugent-Hopkins for, like, Dustin Brown, like, I don't know, like, they're gonna do something like that.
Mark it down now.
Anyway, all that to say, I'm not a huge believer in what they've done, but on a basic level, I'm happy for that city because they've had a miserable run.
Yeah.
Since basically, if you exclude 2006, since like 1991 when they last won the Stanley Cup, or is it 1990? I think it's 1990. Sorry, yes. The last cup without Gretzky. And look, the way the Western Conference is set up, the way this playoff seeding is set up, they're going to be in a position to make a run at the conference final and potentially the final every year, as long as they can keep this core and build around them smartly. I don't trust them to do that, but the way the system is set up, they have a chance.
Well, when Todd McClellan pulls up Pete DeBoer and tries to start Cam Talbot for 80 games again.
Yeah, right.
give Todd McClellan a little credit. He moving Draisaitl, probably should have done it a long time ago. But, you know, that's a good segue into the Washington-Pittsburgh series, because I believe, yes, the Penguins were up 3-1, and, you know, Crosby concussed, but it just looked like the Capitals were out. And then Barry Trotz moves Alex Ovechkin to the third line with Eller and, is it Brett Connolly?
Mm.
And that's kind of changed the entire outlook of the series. Now it's tied 3-3. Washington's going home for Game 7.
Mm.
I mean, I'll make my pick first. I'm picking Washington to win it.
You're sticking to your guns.
Before we get into more predictions, though, do you guys want to talk about Niskanen Crosby?
Yeah.
Real quick, since
we haven't done that yet.
The entire world has already talked about it, but yeah. I'll give my quick take. I thought it was accidental. I thought it was just a weird, fluky play. It's unfortunate. I think the correct call was made on the ice. I'm more worried about Crosby now after tonight, where he got checked in the boards.
Yeah, I saw that.
Head first into the boards.
Hey.
Like, top of the head.
Patrick Hornqvist, he's a menace. He took out Sheary, and through trying to check someone else that was behind Crosby, He took out Crosby.
There's no way Crosby is 100%.
No, oh, no, no way.
And I'm really worried about him.
Yeah, like, what,
because he got concussed in the beginning of the season, too.
Yeah, after that play, I was like, Sidney Crosby is being very foolish right now. Like, I phrased it this way. Multiple Stanley Cup winner Sidney Crosby.
Gold medals.
Is being extremely foolish.
I mean, he's
like, I'm not him. I'm not his doctor. I don't know how he feels right now. He says he's fine. That's all I got. But
he's had severe concussions that kept him out for basically 2 years.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been instances before where other people got in concussions. Like Brandon Dubinsky a couple years ago got hit in the head, felt fine. I think he either played the next game or he just went out he had like a practice underneath him. And then the symptoms started up. Mm. So, like, it didn't show right away.
Yeah.
And just based on Crosby's history, based on that hit, like, the impact to his head, it did not look good. And he can't be, even if he feels fine, there's no way he can be 100%.
No.
How did the concussion spotter not take him out after he went headfirst into the end boards?
I thought they did take him out.
I don't know.
No, he got taken out at one point because he got cut on the nose from a high stick. But going headfirst into the boards, not enough.
I'm really worried about how he's going to look when he's like Gordie Howe's age.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, you can't get... You know, science is going to advance, and, you know, maybe they find ways to, you know, make it a little easier. But, like, dude, like, and even if he hadn't won Stanley Cups, it's like, man, like, I appreciate that having that heart of a champion, heart of a lion, but, like, you have many years after this whole hockey thing is over. And do you want to, because you hear stories about, like, Mark Savard and how he still can't really fully function.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Pronger still can't really be in like super bright environments. You know, like that's scary.
Yeah.
And you know, you try to trust that the doctors were taking care of him. I think it's completely crap that we still have this team doctor thing.
Yeah.
But you trust that they have, you know, his best interest at heart. But man, like it's just scary. Yeah. More than anything, it's just scary.
Yeah. And getting back to the Niskanen thing, I also think that was an accident.
Yeah.
Anyone that thinks that was premeditated, yeah. I don't buy into that. Because, look, as a hockey player, you are taught to have two hands on your stick. And when someone is unexpectedly flying at you, you're going to get your hands up and you already have both hands on your stick. Like, he didn't extend out and actively cross-check him in the face.
Yeah, there was no extension.
No. So I do.
And the play happened in, like, 1 second.
Yeah, so I do agree that...
For all the screen grabbers.
Right, so I agree that it's a penalty because you need to be in control of your stick at all times. That's what high sticking is all about. But to say that he did that on purpose, I think that's completely off base.
You know, the action he did make with his stick, it was purely a defensive motion. It happens, you know, not just, you know, with someone, you know, coming at you at head height. If someone's coming at you in anything where you turn and suddenly, oh crap, I'm about to get leveled, you're not going to just take it and then, you know, risk getting injured yourself. You're going to put a little bit of a buffer between you and the impact, and you're going to get your hands out in front of you and just up in a protective motion, which is what it was. It was protective. Yeah. And, you know, there was, like Nick said, there was no extension. It sucked because he got him square in the head. But, you know,
the side of the head, too.
Yeah, but he was already falling down, which is why his head was in that position. And Niskanen, you know, he's looking for his defensive responsibility, and then he turns to watch the puck in the slot, and then suddenly there's Crosby there, and there's no time for him to get out of the way, and, you know, Crosby is just in uncontrolled dive down at him, and all he can do is get his hands up, and it's just a reaction.
Yeah.
Like, it's purely just reflex.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a freshman in high school, and I think it was in a practice or a warm-up, but I got a puck on, like, right in that same spot, kind of, like, that side of the helmet. When that spot in the helmet is not nearly as padded. I mean, I'm sure his helmet was probably better than mine, but I had headaches for a long time after that.
I remember
searing head, like, pain in my side of my head. You know, and I didn't get cross-checked in the side of the head.
Yeah.
So
by a full-grown man, like.
And you know, that's I think that's the only concussion I've had. It probably says a lot that I can't remember the other ones.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Maybe there were more.
But you know, like even when I was playing rugby, like I think the difference in hockey is that the impacts are more acute. Whereas in like a sport like rugby, if you get hit, it's more like this big kind of like wave, you know, whereas hockey, like a stick,
it's a lot more focused.
It's pinpointed. And I feel like that hurts more probably.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, this is super depressing.
Yeah, I don't feel good about it.
So moving on to game seven.
I think we might need this Miller Lite real bad.
So shout out to Miller Lite, by the way.
Yeah, it's not a sponsor, but
hopefully a sponsor.
We love what you do.
Even if they don't sponsor us, we just love their product.
Yeah, big ups.
Okay, so who wins game seven?
I've got Pittsburgh. I'm sticking with them.
Okay, you're sticking with them?
Yeah.
Penguins fly together?
They fly together. They march together. I'm sticking with my I just don't see it happening thing for Washington. I'm just sticking with it.
But based on recent history, I should say Pittsburgh, and my gut is telling me Pittsburgh. However, I did pick this series, Washington in seven.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with that. I believe I said seven. I said six or seven. I think it was seven. So I'm just going to like go with what I originally said. If I'm right, I'm right. And I can gloat. If I'm wrong, then it's my bracket was already shit anyway. So
okay. I'm going to go Caps. I picked them. I said Caps in seven. I have the Caps winning the Stanley Cup, and I'm not backing off that now, especially the way they've looked the last couple games.
They've looked real good.
Yeah.
Is Daly missing the next game too?
I don't know.
Yeah.
No clue.
We'll have to get our fact checkers.
I don't know
how
much of a difference that makes. Do you start Matt Murray in game seven?
Is he back?
Yes.
Oh, damn.
Well, they say he's back, but it sounded like his his injury, which it seemed like some sort of groin injury, was severe enough where if it was the regular season, he would have missed, you know, a month or two. And, you know, he's probably missed a month now. I would think he's close to 100%, well enough to go, but he's been sitting on, like, he hasn't seen action since warm-ups.
There's no way.
Yeah, to roll out of bed and just, like, stroll into game seven.
Yeah. So the real question is, how confident do you feel about Fleury? Because he's played very well.
I think he's fine.
But if you look at...
Game six was not his fault.
If you look at what happened today, three goals in the same spot, glove.
Granted, that's...
This again?
Well, I will say, it does seem like Washington was shooting at that spot and picking on him in that spot.
Maybe.
Which, you know, may be, you know, indicative of a way he's playing and how Washington is going to attack him. However, Washington, they were hitting that spot in the crook of the arm next to the head on the glove side, which is nearly impossible for a goalie to actually grab.
Any goalie.
Yeah, like any goalie.
Those are perfect shots.
Yeah, like if I was saying the other day, if you have a kid or a student or someone who's learning hockey and they're practicing a certain shot, tell them to practice that shot. Shoot right next to the goalie's head. If you can nail that, you're going to score a lot of goals.
They also had a lot of time to pick those spots, too, like that Burakovsky goal.
Well, that's kind of the punchline in all this is, yeah, they were picking glove when they were getting grade A chances.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I kind of hate about these narratives is like, yeah, well, they're scoring glove side on like beautiful scoring chances.
Yeah.
Does it really matter where they scored there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. I just think it's overblown, but that's my personality. Just maybe talking there more than anything.
Also the former goalie.
Yeah. Yeah, because I just think that as a goalie, you know, how people talk about, oh, they're picking on his glove or they're picking on his five hole. It's like, no goalie, especially in the NHL, has a glove that bad to where you're going to score on every time you shoot there.
Not since Corey Crawford was bad.
Yeah, and that was, and it's always in these little, like, two-game spurts where it's just kind of randomness.
And you look at Corey Crawford now, not an issue.
Yeah. So, I think you said Pittsburgh, two for Washington. I think a fun little game to play here is also, maybe it's too easy of a question to answer, but for both these game sevens, which team or teams has the most on the line?
Washington, for sure.
So, Washington in this series in the East and then in the West.
In the West?
Anaheim. Like, I agree with Washington. I think it's the same reason. You know,
yeah.
Anaheim, like you said, you know, four straight series where they've been up 3-2 and lost all those series games in game seven. They have a hill to get over.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have to prove to themselves that they can do it. And, you know, like, even at sort of this narrowing window from Perry and Getzlaf's perspective, you know, like, they have to do it. And Washington, who hasn't been to the conference final with this team.
Yeah, which is crazy.
You know, like, it's another hill that they have to get over. Like, it's the parallel is very similar.
Two Bruce Boudreaux coach teams.
Yeah.
So it's his fault.
Yes, clearly. Bringing it back.
Hey, Minnesota's already out. So yeah.
Yeah. I would say that with Anaheim, clearly, if they lose, it's a huge step back, because the entire reason for kind of, well, not completely, but retooling the roster last summer, changing coaches, trading away Frederik Andersen, was to win a game 7, and I mean, maybe even to win a game 6. And if they can't do it, then who gets the blame? And I think that it probably circles back to the GM. It all depends how ownership feels about, can they get it done with, you know, what they have. But in the same breath, because I think there's a lot of people who are very, oh my God, if the Ducks lose, you know, this is over, or this is like a huge step back. I would also say that look at their blue line. I mean, mm-hmm. they're all entering their primes. John Gibson is only 23, and I think he had a good regular season. I think he hasn't looked, you know, very consistent in the playoffs, but I'm going to trust the 82 games I saw before that. More than like this little sample here. Mm. And then, you know, up front, that's a bit more of a worry. But, you know, you got guys like Raquel, Richie,
and Getzlaf being Superman right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Getzlaf is getting older, but he is 31. He's going to be 32 this summer. But he still has a couple years. I think Corey Perry is going to have a bounce back season next year. And then, you know, they got guys like Sam Steele, Max Jones coming up through the junior ranks. So I think this team clearly needs to make good on their investments and those top three guys soon.
Mm.
But it's not doom and gloom if they lose. It's just like, man, this was a pretty big opportunity. Especially because I just still think they're the better team. Mm. What was I going to say? One final thing about the Ducks that I'll say. Ryan Kesler has not looked very impressive in these playoffs.
Mm.
I was looking through some of his numbers today and just nothing is eye-popping. He's got one goal in these playoffs. He has, I believe, 4 or 5 goals since the All-Star break.
Yeah, I was going to say that brings his total up to 5.
So,
and I've almost thrown up that many times this year.
And he
2017, never forget.
And he's 32 years old.
What, that wasn't a valid point?
I'm trying to move away from the throw up imagery. We've already done that a lot in this pod, talking about the Oilers. But I don't know. I just think with Kesler, you know, he has that contract, and he's played some tough minutes over the years, played in some big games. I mean, it doesn't look good.
Aside from that first game when he did a really good job corralling Connor McDavid.
Yeah,
and you know, it's not just him, but there's 5 guys, but he did a good job in that game. Yeah. But aside from that, it hasn't been that great.
But my thing with that is that I don't even trust anymore that he's driving that. I think it's it's Cogliano and Silverberg, which it makes sense. They're faster, they're more skilled.
Yeah.
And all he has to do is assume a defensive posture.
Yeah. So I'm a little worried about Ryan Kesler, because I mean, well, I'm worried about him on the ice, because he's living a great life, living in Southern California, making millions of dollars with a no-movement clause. Sounds pretty nice.
Yeah, you're not worried about his first-world problems, just his
hockey problems. His 1%er problems.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, from a Ducks perspective, that's going to be a contract that's going to be, I don't know how it'll look in a few years. All right. Oh, and as far as Washington-Pittsburgh goes, clearly Washington is the team that has more on the line. But I don't know. Again, with them, they have some young guys. You know, I think you look at Burakovsky tonight, Kuznetsov, Nate Schmidt, Dmitry Orlov, and then they have Ilya Samsonov, up and coming goalie. So I don't know. Like, I think they're not toast either.
Yeah. We've got listener input on here.
Oh,
our good buddy Nick, friend of the show, says, "Tell Fifi the Ducks are going to lose. Injuries up and down the lineup going to play a factor."
Up and down.
Up and down.
Is he holding Kevin Bieksa's injury against them?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, look at the Oilers. They're considerably more banged up in more important positions.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
I don't disagree that they could potentially lose.
It's like Joe said. I would not put money on Anaheim. I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, not at all.
But I'm picking.
But they should win.
They'll be favored.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're talking like Vegas favored or
yeah,
just like
yeah, they'll be favored. I mean, home team game seven, better regular season, you know.
Yeah,
they'll.
But Edmonton should have won already.
Oh yeah,
we have to take that into account.
Yeah, yeah. I
after Anaheim should have
big,
won already.
Big ups to Nick for the listener input, but I'm gonna strongly disagree there.
Strongly disagree.
Yeah, strongly. Really? Well, yeah. I mean, come on. Like up and down the lineup. Like, what are we talking about? we're talking about practice.
We're talking about practice, man.
Eves might be a big factor.
That's a huge. I really think that's a big deal.
Because here's their guy. They're very high on him. Only needed him.
No, I'm the first one to admit that I was wrong about Patrick Eves.
I don't know.
He was way more of a contributor than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, but at the same time, Raquel, Getzlaff, and Perry have looked good together. The Kessler line is still good. Wait, is there more?
Nick is doubling down. He says, wrong, Fifi. Wrong.
Okay.
Wrong.
You're wrong. Just pointed at the camera, by the way.
He's speaking directly to you.
Hey, I mean, I'll give him credit. The Ducks might lose. Mm. That's a full possibility. I don't know why I'm like, why am I getting this heat? Like, you guys picked the Ducks too.
But we paraphrase it by, or preface it by saying, we're not confident at all about it.
This is a lukewarm take from me.
Okay.
And like I said earlier in the show, with Anaheim, with Edmonton, they're fast. Like, when they run and gun, they run and gun. And that's the speed's a great equalizer. So
I feel like now I'm going to be so nervous watching the game because I just want to be right.
About Anaheim winning? Or
I'm forgetting your takes. I'm so fearful that I'm going to be wrong. Nick says it's your show. So.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, hey, appreciate the input. A little banter is always good. His Barracuda, by the way. Shout out to the San Jose Barracuda in the second round. Or I guess the division finals? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so they're tied 1-1 with San Diego.
Yeah, a little battle of California.
Yep. So Barracuda took game two, I think 5-1. Yeah. So good season for them.
Then they lost in OT the first game.
Yeah. A game when they, I think, massively outshot them and were leading until very late.
Yeah, I think the Barracuda are the better team.
Mm.
So
they up until game one, they were 5-0 on home ice, I think, against the Gulls. So.
Yeah, the Gulls have the problem with the Gulls is that their two best players are in the NHL right now.
Yeah,
or maybe even three of their best players: Kasha, Theodore, and Montour. Mm. So. But that was going to happen at some point. That team looked a lot different last season, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they've kind of been gutted. But, I mean, Montour should have been in the NHL like a year ago. Yeah. He was over a point per game last season. But I like this Barracuda roster. I like the job that Nick is doing over there.
Yeah.
So, head coach. I'm trying to lay it on thick here.
Yeah, I can tell.
But, yeah, he props to him. And, I mean, like that blue line. I know you guys don't like Mirko Mueller, but he's a good AHL defenseman.
And that's the thing. It's purely an NHL bias that I'm having.
And like, they have a fun group of forwards. You know, they're okay. I didn't know this, but their coach, Roy Sommer, he coached in Roller Hockey International.
Really?
Which was a professional roller hockey league in the 1990s that was televised on ESPN. Played in NHL arenas. I think this was because of the lockout. And he coached the San Jose Rhinos at the Shark Tank.
Oh, hey.
Look at this Pierre Maguire knowledge over here.
Well,
wow.
Well, because I've always known about Roller Hockey International because, I'm a roller hockey player / fan. But I was watching some footage of it the other day. And those games, I mean, you watch roller hockey today, and it's a fast-paced game. Well, you know, like the guys are very skilled.
Yeah.
They play slow when you get to like the pro levels. Yeah. But back then, the guys can barely skate. Like, you can tell they're all ice players who just, kind of like, all right, we need something to do here.
Yeah.
But that league was, I mean, it was a big deal. Like the Anaheim Bullfrogs played at the Arrowhead Pond back then to like sold out crowds. There was a team in Montreal coached by it was a former NHL player. But anyway, like, this was a big deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, Roy Sommer is like, he's a San Jose guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He rolls deep.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's done a great job with that team. And Nick has been the man
Yeah.
Working the video, doing good work.
We need to get Nick on here.
We've been wanting to.
Pick his brain about Julius Bergman.
Yes.
Hey, I pinned Julius Bergman as the next up-and-coming defenseman when he was like three years ago.
That was like 3 years ago.
Yeah. And look at him now.
Yeah, that was after like...
He's got a little Hampus Lindholm to his game.
You think so? You're making
the... I've watched him like twice this season.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a good puck mover. I don't know how good he is defensively. He's not that... I don't think he's that big, is he?
No, he's actually bigger than I thought. I think he's over 6 feet.
Yeah, and he's like, I think he's like 190 something.
Something like that. Maybe even over. I need to pay closer attention to like their player.
You need to not be guzzling $2 beers.
Yeah, and $1 hot dogs.
Classic AHL.
Yeah.
I love a friend of ours, John Moore, on his Snapchat story because he was going to both Barracuda games and he's like, my diet consists of hot dogs and beer.
So he's living his best life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was a fun little local. Local report. See, this is why people need to interact with the Periscope, because then we can have a little World Hockey International.
Yeah, it's a conversation.
Do you guys want to talk about the Ottawa-New York series?
Oh, it's happening?
Ottawa is up 3-2, and they might... They're probably going to be in the Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I'd bet on them, because, oh my God, I'd be rich right now.
Yeah. I mean... Our buddy Sean called it. He said that Anaheim and Ottawa are getting back circa 2007.
I don't understand Sean's logic sometimes, but he gets it right.
Oh, I asked him about it. I was like, why did you pick Ottawa? He was like, oh, it's just going to be an 07 rematch. That's all.
And he might be right. He might be right.
No, well, there's no way Ottawa beats Washington.
We'll see.
Nashville, though.
Nashville.
Eliminating the Blues. A fun team. I love the attention they're getting because, you know, it's deserved. Good national anthem, by the way, before game six.
Yes.
It was Lady Antebellum and two other guys harmonizing.
I missed it.
It was pretty good.
Really?
It's made up for some of the national anthems.
Yeah. I'm even a fan of Lady Antebellum.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I can't remember if they were featured on an audience song or if he remixed it, but yeah. Big fan.
It's just crazy to think because everyone, for some reason, a lot of people are thinking of Nashville now as this like great hockey city, but I mean, it's in Tennessee.
Mm.
Like, it's just crazy to think that they've taken off like this. And I mean, you think about it though, and hockey's a lot like football in a way because it's intense, it's physical, and especially in the playoffs, it's kind of like a Sunday football game where it just everything really matters. So I can see why they've kind of, you know, been drawn to it.
Yeah, I mean, like there's so much energy in that city, and I like the fact that they embrace the country part of it. Yeah. Like you said, with the anthem and PK Subban going out and singing Johnny Cash music. Like, I feel like they do it right.
Yeah, he's been great for that franchise.
And look, Yellow Helmets, don't underestimate.
They've been growing on me ever since they first did it.
Yeah,
and I'm glad they went full time.
Yeah,
I think they've grown on you, actually.
They have grown on me.
You both of you were extremely against the Yellow Helmets.
Oh, I still am.
It reminds me now of...
It's unique.
I can't remember if it was Chell or if it was one of the 2K games where you could play like the free-for-all and the best player, the one with the most goals, got the gold helmet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I think they do in like the Swedish Elite League.
Yeah, Austin Matthews had it.
Yeah, or like, yeah, the Swiss League where the leading scorer has the yellow helmet or the gold helmet.
Yeah. Oh, this reminds me, thinking of gold helmets, Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah,
they're signing Shipachov. Yeah.
I love their tweet where they tweet out their lineup and it consists of two players and every other spot just says guy.
Guy.
Yeah, they've, that's a nice move.
Yeah.
That's a nice little kind of, all right, let's be entertaining.
I think I read that he had like 70 points in 50 games. Yeah,
I think he was playing with Kovalchuk and Datsyuk.
Okay, so
it could be interesting.
Because, and Ilya Kovalchuk coming back as well.
Yeah.
What if Kovalchuk goes to Vegas? I mean, there's very low chance of it happening, but...
Yeah. That'll be huge.
That would be so much fun.
That, man, what a great time that would be. We would have to go to a game.
Yeah.
We would have to go.
I'm getting excited for that team, and their draft caps were leaked today.
Oh, really?
And they looked cool. They have like the red and gold colors play a really prominent role on the hat. So I wonder how that's going to look. I think the night of the Oh, we already had the draft lottery. The night of the draft, all the Adidas sweaters are getting unveiled.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't wait. That's like 40-something days away.
I can't wait, / I'm very nervous.
Yeah, oh.
How they're going to pull it off.
So you're afraid of like potential disappointment?
Well, I'm excited by the fact that the NHL will have a relevant brand like as its official outfitter. You know, like no disrespect to Reebok, but like it only compounds the like NHL's sort of like fourth place status. You know, cuz the NFL has Nike, baseball has Nike, the NBA's Adidas going to Nike soon. So it's kind of like then hockey's Reebok.
Like,
I don't know how much this stuff matters to you guys, but to me, it, you know.
So you're saying there's no swag in Reebok?
Well, there once was, but the thing is, Reebok has completely rebranded itself as like a fitness, like CrossFit brand. Mm.
And aren't they CCM now, pretty much?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So Adidas owns CCM and Reebok.
Okay.
And so they decided instead of, like, we want to put our label on this, which hopefully means that they see the NHL as an up-and-coming product. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I just, as long as they don't put those stripes on, this, like those three Adidas stripes.
I feel like that is a near certainty.
You think so?
Well, I think that what we might see with the stripes is a bit more of a subdued, like maybe three stripes going horizontally, like right like in the middle of like the rib area or something like that.
I can see them doing it, but having it be like the same color, so it's like really subtle.
Or like, you know, the stitching that goes down the side of the jersey, maybe at the end, like the little corner with like stripes.
Yeah.
I could see something like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad about that.
It wouldn't be the worst thing.
The good thing is that hockey has officials with striped jerseys, so you can't really go full stripes because then it would clash.
That's true.
Anyway,
thinking outside the box.
Yeah, I think. Do we have anything else? Buffalo GM search. Jason Botterill. I don't care.
That's a whole nother hour.
I don't care. There's something else I don't care about.
Well, hurry up and figure out what it is.
Yeah, the fact you can't remember it really—it tells you really. Oh,
Jonathan Drouin trade rumors.
Oh, again?
Yeah. This time it sounds like it's going to happen
for a defenseman, right? Or like that's what they want.
Dude,
potentially.
Drouin Vatanen. Book it.
Book it. Write it down.
Write it down. Okay.
Everyone, blow up his mentions when it happens.
Did you want me to do the outro this time?
I wish you would.
Okay.
Do it.
Well, thank you for listening to the Garage Hockey Podcast. It's a pleasure to do the outro, to take the mantle. If you enjoyed the show, throw us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/, I think it's Garage Hockey Pod.
Yes.
Follow us on Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod. Tweet at us. But more than anything, if you enjoyed the show, if you've been listening, because we know there's a lot of you that have been listening and that haven't let us know, the best way to let us know is to go on iTunes, leave a review. It doesn't have to be an essay. Just a few sentences, what you like about the show, maybe something you want us to do better at, and leave that review. It would mean the world to us. Seriously, like whenever I see a new review, I just like my heart kind of drops a little bit. I'm like, oh, someone's listening.
It swells. It doesn't drop. It swells.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you.
He's
so
like the Grinch.
Thank you so much for listening. It's been a fun pod. And Game 7's Wednesday night.
Get ready for it.
It's going to be a good night.
Get ready.